correctly with the correct amount.
It is a center for higher learning. It is a place with centuries of secrets in its shadowed halls. This is where you have come to learn the mysteries of the cosmos. Welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast.
Sponsored by CryptoCurium.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast, episode 42. This is the podcast dedicated to Call of Cthulhu and other horror and Lovecraft-related role-playing games. I'm Keeper Dan.
I'm Keeper John. Welcome, everyone.
I'm Keeper Murph. Glad to have you here.
In episode 42, we talk about when we use an existing skill versus creating one of our own.
And we talk about sources of inspiration to keep the game fresh and your players coming back for more.
And we've got other things to talk about. But first, we're going to start things off as usual with the Campus Crier.
Miskatonic University Campus Crier.
Campus Crier's Miskatonic U student paper. Here's we're going to go through feedback and news. And first up, the CryptoCurium Ouija board contest that we had has a winner, and that went to Keeper Wes.
Very cool.
Congratulations, Wes. The information's been sent over to Jason at CryptoCurium. He's a little under the weather right now, so you know, there might be a little bit of a delay in that. So if you've ordered something from CryptoCurium lately and you haven't heard back yet, give a little time. Jason was in the hospital last week. So, you know, give him a little bit of time to get back in normal health, and then everything will be back to business as usual for CryptoCurium.
Was it a hospital stay for sanity loss?
We can say it was.
Sure, it probably was. I mean, after creating something like that Ouija board with the night gaunt planchette and everything, that was pretty freaky looking.
Pretty wild.
It is wild. Congratulations to Wes.
Yeah, very cool. The next winner for our Sense of Sleight of Hand Man contest is Trevlix, oddly enough. So you'll be getting a softback edition of the Sense of Sleight of Hand Man. And I'll be emailing you here shortly to get your shipping details.
Yay.
Very cool. Congrats to Trevlix.
It's always cool when friends of the show win.
Oh, yeah.
And give us some feedback on how you guys liked the contest formats that we did.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I kind of liked having it be automated, personally. The Facebook one was all, you know, actually manually keeping track of stuff, and this being automated really made it much simpler to deal with on our end. And it was cool seeing all the tweets come through, people talking about the contest. So,
yeah, it was really pretty neat. I liked either one of them. Seemed to work pretty cool. So,
yeah,
we like to get
give us some feedback if something was just absolutely horrible from the contest entry side. You know, we need to know about it so we can decide whether or not we want to do those again in the future.
That'd be great. Next up, Cubicle 7 is planning a Cthulhu Britannica London box set.
Yep.
And it looks freaking awesome. I don't know it looks really, really cool.
I have not had a chance to take a look at it. I have two of the Britannica books. And I want to continue my collection and get the rest as well. But
yeah.
Well, there's a link in the show notes. If you haven't seen this by now, there's a link in the show notes to the video that they have of the London box set, and it's really, really cool. You know, if you're a fan of that, you should probably look into it, because I'm probably going to be getting it myself.
You know, the one city is getting a full box set of information, And, well, it's Cubicle 7, which means they're in the UK.
Right. And then it's Cthulhu Britannica. So, yeah, it makes sense. It's really cool, though. It looks really good.
Yeah.
Hopefully it lives up to the hype.
And that's going to be going to a Kickstarter. So whenever that comes up, we will definitely be sharing that and let everybody know that it's there.
Very cool. So they're gonna create it and fund it via the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. They're just gonna use the Kickstarter model for this.
Very cool.
A couple friends of mine started up their own podcast, and it's a little off topic for us, but it's a podcast about Shadowrun.
Oh, cool.
So I had to mention it here because they're friends, and Mr. Johnson on the show, he was the guy who introduced me to the Star Wars Saga Edition game, which then brought me to Order 66, which then inspired me to create this. So,
it's like
there is
circle.
Direct correlation to this show.
And out of just strange tidbit of information, Shadowrun was actually the very first RPG I ever played way back in the day.
Cool.
You know, and I think I may have played Shadowrun one time, but isn't that the game where there's a rift in reality or something? So elves and dwarves exist in like modern times. And,
yeah.
It's not a rift in reality. It's just the cycle of magic has come back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like people who you knew one day just like woke up the next day and they were a 12-foot tall troll or some shit.
After an evening of horrific pain and
horrific
agony,
pain.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, it's actually a really cool setting. I like it. I've played it before. Of course, I like that kind of cyberpunky magic kind of thing. It's really fun.
Yeah,
it's a good system too. The newer versions out are really good. So,
yeah, I haven't got any of the new ones. I think it was like third ed whenever I used to play. But
well, I mean, I think third had been out for I'm not going to say a number. I want to say like 10 years almost before the fourth came out or some ridiculous amount of time. But yeah, it's good stuff.
Yep. So I just wanted to say congrats to getting that show up and running. So if you're interested at all in that game, you know, they just released episode 5. So good time to jump in.
Very cool.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
And now we've got feedback and we're getting lots of it and we love it.
Sweet.
Now, we've got some emails that we haven't put on the list here, otherwise it'd be half the show. So, you know, we're kind of sparsing out some of the written feedback. You know, the audio feedback we're definitely going to try and fit in because, well, it's your voices on the show. Yay!
Very cool. And if just because we're not putting your emails in the show, don't think that we're not reading them. We're still reading them and replying to them as normal. So if you want to send us an email, go ahead.
Yeah. First up, we've got from Sorrow King, also known as Ruben Dodd, and he says, guys, just have to say, love the show. One of the few things I look forward to on the interwebs. Thank you very much. One of the things that first caught my interest with your podcast was Pikmin's Institute, as no other podcast takes an interest in the art side of the industry anymore. So I'd love to hear more about the visual influence of artwork on games, for the Keeper's descriptions and the history of weird art. The weird art side has been around longer than weird fiction, just under other names. So anyway, guys, love the show. Stay groovy. Ruben Sorrow King Dodd. So thanks a whole lot there, Sorrow King. The bringing in the Pikmin's Institute was kind of a... That was you, Murph, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was me. You know, that's something we need to pick back up again. We hit that once or twice and that was that. And we opened it up a space on our forum for artists to, because there really wasn't a place anywhere else, and gave them, you know, a place to at least come and talk or talk to people who don't normally know what they're doing or stuff
show
like that.
Off but their
yeah, show off their wares and whatnot. But yeah, we need to get back into that and do some more Pikmin stuff. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that side of things, and you know, and I like his ideas of more about the visual influence of artwork on games. So that's something we'll have to put on the list as an actual topic later.
Yeah, I don't want to try and get into that now because I don't know that I could answer it intelligently.
Yeah. Let's go into the next email here. We've got Todd from North Bay, Ontario.
North Bay. Cool. Never been there, but it sounds nice.
Yeah. Sure.
And it's Ontario, so I mean.
I'm assuming that there's a bay involved. And it's up north.
Side.
It's the north side of that bay. It's probably chilly, too.
Yeah, probably. He says, just dropping you a line to let you know how much I've enjoyed the podcast over the last couple months. Thank you very much, Todd. And he wanted to ask you a couple questions. I wanted to ask you about keeping players up to date with regards to in-game events. In the past, with different gaming groups and different RPGs, I've used various methods to keep my players informed / reminded about events that have occurred in-game. I've used simple verbal recaps at the table, printed newsletters, emailed journals, and MS PowerPoint presentations. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, what a combination of these. What's your preferred means of keeping your players up to date with your game's events? Maybe you don't do this at all and just let your players' notes be all they have to go on between sessions. Good question. You definitely have gone the extra mile there, Todd, or extra PowerPoint. Kilometer in your case. It's
yeah, PowerPoint in general is really friggin' aggravating. So the fact that you managed to do PowerPoint presentations of using in-game events is
PowerPoint for the forces of good. That's kind of rare.
And you know, his email pretty much summarizes all the common methods of doing a recap, you know, the verbal recap and and even that's one of the great things about Call of Cthulhu, especially with most of the published scenarios are the handouts. And and the handouts, you know, that have been accumulated thus far are a fantastic way of you know, having an ongoing method of doing the recap. You know, hey, just, you know, you might want to re-review the handouts or even in combo with a verbal recap going, if you'll remember, you found this at this point in the time, and, you know, then we moved on and this occurred, and here are the handouts for that. And with Skype games that are really, it seems like, are becoming more and more common, which I think are fantastic, verbal recaps, in my experience, seem to be the norm.
They are the norm. Now, I'm trying something slightly different with I'm running the Sense of Sleight of Hand Man right now. And what I'm doing is using our forums in the, you know, the Tales of Mysteries section, where the play-by-post games usually go. I'm using play-by-post style posts to do in between game sessions and keep players involved between sessions, which is something new for me. But it seems to work out pretty well. We were able to get some interesting things happen this last round. And so that's another method that I've not tried before, but I'm giving it a shot now.
That's cool.
I have done one or two other things that he didn't have in the list. For the Serenity game that I ran, I had a wiki that I had put together on my website that was also used as the player's version of the Cortex. So I would put future game items in there that they could look up.
Very cool.
And
that's a lot of work, though, Dan.
It is.
I did the same thing for a Dark Heresy game, which is the Warhammer 40K RPG. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot of work to keep the wiki up and relevant with everything, and then trying
especially
to get your players to do it.
Just the GM doing it.
Yeah, that was my problem. Is trying to get player, you know, motivated to go and do it as well, so I wouldn't be the only one doing it.
Yeah, that's the key, is if both the GM and the players are interested in keeping a wiki updated, then, you know, that works out terrific. You take your game notes and throw that into there, and you know, you can sign up for something like Obsidian Portal, and there you go. There's your wiki for your campaign set to go. You know, so that's a good one. Also, nowadays, with being able to record games, you can just use that as your reminder and recap. If everybody just wants to give it a listen before playing again, say if there's a delay between them, you know, if you do one session a month or something, you know, just listen to it.
True.
He says, my second question has to do with music resources. In my current game, I'm planning to use a PowerPoint presentation as a means of recapping what's happened in previous sessions, as we discussed earlier. My plan is to make it look and sound like a recap from something akin to an Old Republic Pictures serial, like Dick Tracy, Captain Marvel. I would think things also like Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon, that sort of thing. Right. I'd really like to have some era-appropriate adventuresome music accompanying the presentation and wanted to know if you had any suggestions. I think the music used for Dr. Gerard's history pieces is definitely along the lines of what I'm looking for. Can you tell me where you got it and if there's any online sources for free music that you can recommend for my purposes, as well as general game mood music? Thanks again for the podcast. Keep up the work.
It's a nice email, though. That was a good email.
That is a good email.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
Very much. Captain Gerard.
And his freedom fighters.
Oh, Lord. Dr. Gerard's history pieces, what he does is he finds most of his music on archive.com, looking at old either newsreels or organ music. He's got a thing for organ music on archive. So he'll also look for a particular, if he has in mind like a particular instrument that he'll want, he'll kind of Google that, find some old artist of that, and then start digging around on archive until he finds something of theirs worth playing. Pretty much anything you're going to get on archive, you can just use it outright. You might have to chop it up a little bit and play with it some to make it sound a little bit better, but you know, it's free. So.
And in the show notes, I'm going to have a link to a site that where I get most of my music for the show. It's the website is called Incompetech, and these got it's all one artist that does all of these, but yeah, he has just a ton of royalty free music.
Yeah, I forgot all about this guy, but yeah, I've been here before as well, and he's got a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And for genre, you can hit the button that says silent film, and there's a ton of choices. So just within that. And then otherwise, you can just check boxes for what type of feel you're looking for. Dark, yeah, eerie, aggressive, suspenseful. Epic. I mean, you just check them.
It's very cool. It's a good find, Dan.
Yeah, I really recommend them for almost any podcast or gaming kind of thing. You know, it's pretty likely you're going to find something that you're going to want to use from there. But Todd, let us know how it goes with your music finding and, you know, and your, you know,
your PowerPoint presentations.
Good uses of PowerPoint. Yeah, that's that's just definitely different.
Yeah, different for me, that's for sure.
Let's use usually PowerPoint if I hear PowerPoint,
we're
going to
use some. Yeah, right. Oh gosh, he's going to hate us.
Let's get into our voicemails.
Yeah, cool.
Hi guys, just listened to episode number 40, and I'm trying your speak pipe off my iPad. Wanted to say I really enjoyed this episode. Two particular things stood out. Number one, I really liked the part about how newspapers worked in the 20s, and I wish you guys would do more like that. That was fantastic. Secondly, I liked the way that your bumpers overlapped with the speech. That was also really nice. Anyway, thanks a lot, and I hope this voicemail works. This is Dr. Bob calling, and I say go Pods.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.
That was frighteningly good audio off of an iPad.
Yeah, that was so clear. I loved it.
That was that blew me away. I would not have expected that, but wow.
Yeah, they're putting good some good mics in those things.
I guess so. Crazy.
And SpeakPipe's just cool.
SpeakPipe is cool. That's why you should leave us another voicemail, Dr. Bob.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Bob.
Thank you so much. And yeah, we definitely do plan on doing other career-centric topics. You know, we kind of got the feel for that with the journalist one, and we're kind of planning on doing a similar thing for other careers, and that'll then also tie into whatever the communications or tech was that profession utilized. And as far as the sounds overlapping the dialogue, that was actually a technical flub. That was me screwing up in the editing.
It was a good screw up, though, Dan. I liked it, too, actually. Yeah, I didn't realize until now you screwed it up. I thought you did it on purpose, just like Dr. Bob.
Yeah. I'm glad that people weren't, you know, upset about it. But, yeah, last show, it wound up with, like, 15 seconds of things overlapping the dialogue way too much, and so I had to go back and redo a second version of the episode with it fixed, and then re-release it on the feed. So if you just picked this up off the feed, the previous episode on the feed, then it should be the correct one. But I'm glad it wound up not being terrible. And our next voicemail is up from Trevlix.
Hey guys, this is Trevlix from the forums. Just wanted to call and leave you guys a voicemail saying great job, keep it up. I look forward to every single podcast that you guys put out. I do have one question for you. As keepers, what do you guys do when you want to research a new great old one or monster or anything along those lines for a scenario? Do you just look at the gaming material that's available? Do you find the actual short stories or the canon stories for that creature or great old one? Or do you just make things up as you go? In any case, keep up the good work. Looking forward to hearing you guys again, and go Pods!
Thank you, Trevlix. Okay, well, what about you guys? Do you research out, like, the full-on history of the critter, or just run with what's in the scenario?
It depends, for me, what I'm using it for. If it's going to be a recurring kind of creature that's got a significant place, or deity, I guess, that has a significant place in the game or campaign that I'm running, I'll do a little bit more research. If not, I'll just go with what's in the book or make it up. I'll be honest.
Yeah, with like the Ubusathla thing recently that I've been trying to work on, I went back and read the Clark Ashton Smith story, and I don't know how many other stories are out there that have that, you know, great old one. And I've done some, you know, cursory looking, and, you know, I just have the Smith story so far. But yeah, I mean, if it's available, readily available, I'll check out the source. You know, at least the root source. I don't know if I get all of the different aspects, but I try and read something. You know, and that'll give me pair that with the. With the book notes, and then try and drive on and extrapolate from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Especially if you're going to be publishing something, I definitely would encourage anybody who's publishing a scenario to go back and look at the source material for whatever creature it is that you're utilizing. So that way it's, you know, it's not getting further and further away from its roots.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
As far as just doing a scenario that's, like, pre-written, I've tended most of the time to stick with what it gives you in the scenario and then look up the game stats in the core rulebook. I try and keep my, you know, I'm one of those GMs in general that I tend to probably over-prep a bit, so I have to, you know, keep myself from going deeper than is really practical for running a game. So I tend to just limit myself to just the game material for most of the creatures. If it's something that's really significant, like Murph said, then I might, you know, go a little deeper yet and even just do some web searches, you know, find a couple of visual ideas of what it might look like for description and that sort of thing. But I usually just stick with what's in the game.
Very cool. All right.
Now we've got, and our last voicemail for the show is from DM Kojo.
Right.
Hi, guys. This is DM Kojo calling. I'm really enjoying my freshman year at Miskatonic University podcast, Go Pods. So I have a comment going way back to episode 15 about the Dreamlands. You guys had talked about the possibility of converting old Dungeons & Dragons modules to adventure in Call of Cthulhu Dreamlands. And I thought that was a great idea, and I think some modules definitely lend themselves very well to this idea. some of the modules I was thinking of was B4, The Lost City. At the end has a kind of demonic beast on it, so perfect for some Cthulhu Mythos type creatures. I also think that X2, Castle Amber, would be a good one, especially since it's based on the works of Clark Ashton Smith and being a contemporary of Lovecraft's. I think that would fit good for a very pulpy kind of adventure. And I also think EX1 and EX2 by Gary Gygax, Dungeonland and Land Beyond the Magic Mirror, respectively, would be great, being that they're that weird fantasy Alice in Wonderland kind of feel to them. I think that'd be very interesting in the Call of Cthulhu environment. The last one I was thinking was Module N1, which is about against the cult of the reptile god. Again, very easy to change up the reptile god at the end with Cthulhu Mythos type monsters. So just some thoughts on that. I know it's going way back, but I'm slowly catching up to the podcast. So keep up the good work. Thanks.
Thank you to Kojo.
That's some really good info. Yeah, I like that. Actually, I know about one of those, it didn't click until he said it, but the Castle Amber X2 from the original D&D series. That one actually has, I think it's like a strange homage to like Poe's Fall of House of Usher, but it's also, you know, draws from the Clark Ashton Smith stories, like he was saying. But a lot of the stuff in it has some very Lovecraftian creatures and stuff like that in there. That's actually a really good example of one you could pull in fairly easily.
Yeah, I'll see if we can find links to these for the show notes that we can have in there. They actually have almost all the old D&D supplements available online now. So see if we can find links for these. I didn't realize that these scenarios all had like code names.
Oh yeah, well that was original D&D. Yeah, that's how they did it. They had X2s and NS1 and all that craziness.
Yeah, like the B series are the beginner modules. The X series are the expert modules. And some of the other ones have different
strange
codes.
Little meanings. Yeah. And stuff.
Okay.
You know, the great thing about the Dreamlands, and again, kind of touching back on being able to convert some of these D&D modules into this for the Dreamlands is, you know, the Dreamlands have all kinds of terrain types. Right. So another series of modules that came to mind for me as DM Kojo was reading that list off is Die 3, 4, and 5, which was the Deserts of Desolation series. And so it's set, you know, in a remote desert locale, and something like that could also be easily ported into the Dreamlands. So those were all great suggestions. Thank you again, DM Kojo. You're getting high marks for your freshman year. I'll give you that.
Have you a real love of books and learning? You do? That's good.
Hey Dan.
What? What you're playing with? What?
I'm playing with your card catalog guy here, and it's fun.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff in there.
Yeah, tell us about it, please.
Well, this is something I actually ran across yesterday when I was surfing around for some other stuff and found this. What it is it's a page called Don John. I'm assuming that's a person. But
we can only hope.
It has a whole bunch of different game systems with random generators for things. You can do, you know, the usual things, random generators for names and for dungeons and for descriptions of taverns and all that kind of stuff. And it's got, you know, fantasy, specific D&D stuff, Pathfinder, and then it has a section for weird fiction.
Very cool.
And So for weird name generator, you can select different types of names. Now, it defaults to being things from the Cthulhu mythos. And then you can drop down another box, and you can choose male and female names. So for just, you know...
characters or whatnot,
Western
NPCs.
People, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, these are standard Western-style names. And then there's setting, so you can have unspeakable names and mythos tomes. So if I needed to generate up some potential, you know, deities or something...
Oh, that's good, too.
Unspeakable
really...
names, and it basically mishmashes a bunch of really bizarre things together.
It's like taking strange syllables from every possible combination of mythos creatures and just mashing them together. It's quite pleasing to the eye, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it comes out pretty good.
Yeah,
and then there's
awesome.
One for mythos tomes,
which is just about as awesome as the other one. The Baloof tablets, whatever that is. The Articles of Apocalypse. That's awesome.
Yeah. The History of Worms.
I've got the Lexicon of Worms. The Tome of Al-Ad. That's very cool.
And then there are names, both male and female categories, for a whole bunch of different societies around the world. There's Arabic, Aztec, Chinese, Egyptian, and Sumerian. So if you want to have an NPC, you know, to talk about, you know, I need an ancient Aztec king.
Right.
I just jump on that, and now I've got like 10 of them to choose from.
That's awesome. Yeah, I really like this. This is fun.
And there's another random generator in here, and what that one does is it will generate up an NPC with all sorts of different info, including stats.
Wait, where are you seeing that?
On the left-hand side, under Weird Fiction.
Uh-huh.
And then it
says...
Oh,
random generator.
Yeah.
I see it now. I didn't click on it because it just said random generator.
Yeah. If you do that one, you've got two different categories in there. So you can do Call of Cthulhu NPCs, and you choose the era.
Oh,
either
my
Victorian
gosh.
England, modern, or 1920s New England. Choose
you
the gender.
Have just saved me ridiculous amounts of time.
Yeah.
This is awesome. So it then spits out a name, an occupation, stats, so your core stats.
Sixth edition
and then
stats,
sixth edition stats, and then a short descriptive piece of tidbit of information.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You know, mine came up with the first one here. Let me just describe what it gives. Viola Zimmer, female private investigator. And gives the stats. Then Viola has bobbed red hair and amber eyes. She wears a patterned dress and diamond necklace. Viola secretly serves an ancient evil named Yigub.
Yigub. It's so awesome.
And then you can choose, instead of NPCs, you can hit the tab that says Eldritch Tomes. And then you get... a name, a description, and then sanity loss, Cthulhu mythos gains, and how many weeks it takes to study it, and whether it has spells.
The Compendium of Bandura, an ancient tome bound in gold plates and locked. It was written by Professor Claude Reeve, an accomplished adventurer who was found dead, drained of blood in the 17th century. No sand loss, occult +3. Average 7 weeks to study and comprehend. Spells, enchant candle, and enchant wanga. What a useless book. I get to enchant a candle after 7 weeks of hard studying.
It kind of depends on what the candle does afterwards.
Uh-huh. I suppose so, but...
See, that could be what you use to do the core rulebook spell candle communication.
That's a very good point. That's thinking
two
of the
people
box
with
there.
Those. Yeah, it basically turns a candle into a telephone.
What in the world does it, do either of you remember what a wonga is? Am I just having a brain fart here, or is
no,
it not a very? Common
I know I've one? Heard it before. But
I
I'm
have not.
Not.
I think this might be making up names as well for creatures and stuff, which is great. I don't know.
There are
pretty cool.
Oh, no, there is a... Oh, no. You know what a wonga is.
No.
It's a... I don't either. I'm reading the dictionary definition. No, I'm not, because it won't let me. It's some sort
it's
of voodoo
an Aboriginal
thing.
Original Australian word.
Now, what is a baka? B-A-K-A.
I'm not entirely sure.
I have a randomized Eldritch Tome, the Librum of... Pictozolan, something like that. It's a set of engraved stone slates contained in a U box inlaid with platinum. There's no sanity laws. How can there be no sanity laws for this damn thing? You get a +2% to your occult skill. It takes 4 weeks of study and comprehend. And it contains the spells Enchant Doll, Soul Extraction, and Summon Bind Baka. Like, that is awesome.
Right. Well, here's another one.
Thank wonderful Googleness. No, you gotta wait. Hear this. It's a Japanese word, baka. It means idiot, stupid, fool, or foolish.
Nice.
No,
so
okay,
you can
listen
summon
here.
An idiot.
Wait. Okay, so back in the day, I knew this girl named Sandra Baka, right? And her brother was kind of an idiot. Okay. So at the time, it was really popular to have your name tattooed. In like kanji letters, in Japanese kanji, right? Well, this guy went and had his last name tattooed across his chest in like 4-inch tall, maybe 5-inch tall Japanese kanji spelling out baka, okay? And very good friends with some Japanese people. And he was showing it off and she just started busting out laughing. And then she tells... She tells him that, you know, you have idiot written across your chest, you moron. So yeah, this dude has idiot or moron, whatever, written on his chest and giant tattooed there. It's that was just brilliant. Sorry, I completely forgot about that until because that was like 20 years ago. But yeah, anyway. So some people are just born stupid, you know, you just can't help it. sorry, go ahead.
that's oh, awesome.
God. This is pretty good.
Yeah, this
really.
Is a really useful page.
I really like this.
There's even one for science fiction category.
I see that. So yeah, they got to run a random dungeon wallpaper too.
mm-hmm. I know.
So yeah, it'll do the graphics. It'll generate up the actual map.
I know I'm gonna have to use this. It's gonna be quite fun. Yeah, I'm doing Dreamlands now, guys. By the time you hear this, you've already been screwed. The site's already come into play. You're gonna be wondering, how is he pulling these freaking maps out of his? How is he doing it so fast? Like, wow.
There you go. Secrets out.
There it is.
Yeah, I stumbled across that last night and spent way too long playing with it. And figured, yeah, this needs to be on the show.
This is going to have to go on.
So, thank you, Don John, whoever or whatever you may be.
It's very cool. Yeah, thank you very much. Very cool.
Now we've got the next installment of Miskatonic Radio Pulp.
Professor?
No, Mr. Squirrel.
Professor, are you there? I can't see anything. It's too dark.
I haven't got a spare gallbladder.
Professor, where are we? It looks like a warehouse.
How dare you, sir?
Oh, there you are, Professor. My eyes are just adjusting now.
The bombs are not meant to be dropped on the troops. Wipe out that school instead.
Professor?
Maximum carnage, Sergeant. That is what we are after.
calm down a bit now, okay? I'm not really sure I can make it.
Of course you can. We just need to get the bag with all the lollies in it.
Okay. I'll tell you what. Let's go find that bag of lollies.
Too kind, sir. Too kind. Those bloody books are still after me.
I think I can
I do without
some
you?
Light up ahead. Come on, Professor. I'll help you up.
Ginseng.
Right. Just have a seat on this crate, Professor. Catch a breath. Oh, something smells fishy.
Panax vietnamensis, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow, these crates are filled with dried squid?
Oh, we at the circus?
Oh, that's just foul. Their eyes, seems like they're looking at me.
My proboscis tells me we must be in some kind of Chinatown. Did you drive us to Boston, young man?
I don't know how we got here.
I hope there are elephants. I rode the elephants in my youth, you know. Fascinating creatures.
There's a light at the end of this building. There's some people playing a game.
Must be those bloody acrobats. You can never trust an acrobat.
I don't think this is a circus, Professor.
Hands up! No sudden...
Monkey spawn!
Ah! Professor, what are you doing?
Damned acrobats. Leave those children alone.
Will the professor snap out of his torpor? Can Jimmy get out of this bind without the help of his mentor? Tune in next time when you hear the professor say,
"Pass the spaghetti. I think I'm going to sneeze."
Okay.
So
for once, we actually have Jimmy being the straight man in this.
I think the professor failed a sand roll.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I hope they have elephants.
You know what we need? A bag of lollies.
Okay. We need is a new hero, evidently. Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, that was great. Now we're going to have a brief talk about our main sponsor, Cryptocurium. You know, we had kind of, forgotten to do this last show. Oops.
Had a little trouble. Got a little trouble for it. It's all good.
And so basically what we're trying to do is go through, pick something, talk about it for a few minutes, and do that rather than just kind of sticking advertisement, you know, bumpers on the ends of Jimmy's and that sort of thing. And so what I picked for this chat is the Inner Sanctum membership that Cryptocurium has going. And I'm a member at the bronze level, and I really dig this this little membership thing.
It's really cool. I'm a silver member myself. It's really nice. You get some free stuff in the mail, and you get a discount if you meet them in at a con, which worked out well for me at Necronomicon, by the way. And then you get a free birthday gift too, which is really cool.
Now, have you had your birthday since joining up to actually get?
I have not.
Might be.
I have not. It's coming up next month, so we'll.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see what
I
get.
Yeah, mine's in December, so.
Yeah, I'm at the very end of the back end of November, so we should find out a couple of shows ahead, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even at the lowest level, which is bronze, which is where I'm at, you know, you get a Cthulhu idol.
Right, which is a nice one. I'm looking at it right now.
Yep.
Based on Lovecraft's sketch, it looks awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a really cool one.
Yeah, it keeps my my mixer company.
Yeah, mine too.
Then you get a Cryptocurium t-shirt, which is quite nice. I wear that pretty regularly, and it's very durable.
Oddly enough.
Many times, and it's still in really good shape.
I wholeheartedly agree. Some of the shirts you get are not as not as high of a quality as this. I was actually really surprised when I got the shirt that it's held up as much as it has, because I wear it fairly regularly, and it gets washed a lot. So it still hasn't really faded or anything. So I'm really impressed with it.
Yeah. You get the Cthulhu Cult Sigil Pin, which is basically just a sculpted Cthulhu face with a pin attached to the back. And it's got kind of a bronze finish to it.
Yeah, and it's not.
It's cool.
You know, one thing that surprised me about this is when they said, you know, he said it was a pin, and you look at the picture and you don't really get a sense of scale on it. And so it looks, you imagine it to be, okay, well, it's a pin. It's probably maybe 2 inches tall. No, this thing is huge. How big do you think that, like 4.5, 5 inches tall at least? I mean,
it's quite a brooch, but
it's a brooch. Yeah. No, it's that big.
Yeah. I don't have a ruler, you know, within reach at the moment, but yeah, it's a good size. It's a few inches high. You know, it's very nicely sculpted.
It's 3 inches tall. It's pretty, it's larger than I would have expected. Let's put it that way.
Yep. And then there's the birthday gift, as we mentioned, which neither of us have had our birthday since joining, so we don't know what that is. And then early access to limited sales.
Which is cool.
You know, and all that the base level, which, considering the stuff you're getting, you know, bronze membership, $50, I'm perfectly happy with that, because I got 2 sculptures and a t-shirt, and that's...
let's be honest.
Most time you pay $25 for just the shirt.
Right, and the idol itself would have cost you almost $50, really. I mean, it's worth that much if you would have just bought it outright. So, I mean, you're walking away with extra here, regardless. Yeah, I did the silver one, so I actually have the
Alhazred.
Thank you. Tablet. That's what I got. It was really cool. It's like a fragment of it's a fragment of a tablet is what it is. It's got a small local Cthulhu on the top and an elder sign and some tentacles on the bottom. I really like it. It's really cool. It looks like a great game prop that you could use. It's awesome. I really enjoy it too. It sits here and it keeps my monitor company.
And I see a leather Cthulhu journal that looks cool.
Yeah, it's a flip top little journal with his little stylized Cthulhu stamped on the front, which is cool. You know, it sits there on my desk as well. And then if you do the gold membership, he really likes you, basically, because he ends up sending you the implements of the high priest, which is another amulet, which is a cool looking amulet.
Yeah, this one's not a pin. It's got a thing at the top to hang it from.
Right, and it's a big amulet, too. It's 4.5 inches by 3.5 inches. He even gives dimensions on it. Wow. So there you go. Oh, and look, Cthulhu Cult Sigil Pin, 4 inches by 2.5 inches. I knew it was 4 inches. I feel better already. But with the implements of the high priest, you get the dagger, which is cool looking, and your own personal sanitarium patient file from Arkham, so which is awesome as well.
That since you're giving dimensions, that dagger is 11 inches long.
Yeah, it's really cool.
2 inches wide, and it's got a great curved blade to it and everything.
Yeah, it's awesome. It looks really, really good, honestly.
And each of these extra tiers, it contains everything from the previous tier.
Right.
So we're just mentioning that the implements of the high priest amulet and the dagger and the personalized Arkham Sanitarium file.
Well, you get all of the extra stuff, you know, the stuff from the previous ones, and you get the get access to his discontinued items, which is nice. Huge. Yes. That way, if you miss a sale, you can still pick it up, you know, because he has a lot of 24-hour, 72-hour sales, 48-hour sales. And then after that, it's done. Well, if you're an Inner Sanctum member, you can still pick up those items later on, which is really cool. It's worth it just for that in some cases, because some of the stuff is really, really nice, and he does a very limited run on them. So if you miss out, you miss out. But this allows you to at least get some of the extras, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of discuss that and point out the coolness involved with those.
Very cool.
And now a topic submitted from the forums at mu-podcast.com/campus.
Right, and this is a side topic from Logar, who asks, as keepers, when do you decide to make up new skills or just use a stat check or a comparable skill? Specifically, at what line do you cross to decide that something needs its own category?
For me, that line is reusability.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's a big one.
That and repeat use as well. If I find myself having to make the same comparable skill check for something else over and over and over again, I'll just make it into a new skill and be done with it, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, just tell folks to, why don't you just write it down on your sheet as this skill and, make the base percentage, you know, this. I like the ones where the base percentage is based off of attributes. So you say, you know, okay, it's your intelligence times 2. That's your base.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I think that's the most common, honestly. Can either one of you guys think of another scenario where you would create a skill that wasn't being repeatedly used or wasn't exceptionally useful?
Well, so I have seen NPCs with brand new skills that did not have like a lot of reusability to them, but they were really there to help give extra flavor and color to some of these NPCs. And it might be something like trivia type of skills.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've seen NPCs with skills that they're just flavor. They're not actually practical for rolling in any particular use. And most of the time, there's something kind of bizarre and humorous. You know, just a little thing slipped in for the keeper to chuckle at. I have created up some skills before for old games that I did. I created up a hold liquor skill.
Oh, so yeah.
Was it based on constitution?
It was based on your maximum hit points, which really took size and con into account.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So your hit points were your base?
Yeah.
Or, oh, how interesting.
It didn't go down with your hit points necessarily.
Right, no, but yeah,
it took your max hit points as the start.
That's very cool. I like that idea. Hold liquor. I'm going to have to use that.
And it actually came in handy on a number of occasions because, you know, it, when you have players that, they like want to get into a drinking contest with a thug or something. It's like, okay, well, let's figure this out. And with using hit points as a base, it makes it very simple to just kind of throw together for an NPC. Because it's a number you already have.
That's very cool. I like that idea, actually. Do either one of you, John, do you have any other little awesome little skills that you've created that you can share with us?
Nothing comes to mind. I mean,
I don't either. That's why I was hoping something else. Okay, let's forget it, John. Dan, tell us another awesome skill. I'm just joking, sorry.
Yeah.
No, but I'm serious, Dan. I want to hear another awesome skill.
Let's see.
Do you have like intestinal fortitude? Is it based on your something? I don't know. That would be another awesome one. That's more of a sand check, I guess, though. Or you know how when we were kids, and I'm gonna go there because we're all thinking it, okay? When we were kids and we're playing D&D or whatever we were playing, and invariably, one of your party wants to have sexual relationship with a female character, and you have to start getting creative with skills. Has anyone done that?
Nope.
Have you done that?
Because I started playing in my 20s, and
there you go. I did not. I started playing Cthulhu, in my young teens. I started playing in my young teens, and it was fantasy, and you know, a lot of hormones happening with, you know, 9 guys in a small room together by themselves with no female companionship whatsoever. So there was a lot of that happening, unfortunately. We'd invented all sorts of neat skills, none of which I can go into here.
It doesn't take much imagination to really get an idea.
No, I don't. I don't need to go into any imagined descriptions at all, unfortunately. That's why I'm saying everybody's done this. Though that's where I'm getting, I suppose, is that everybody's made up skills once or twice. Mm-hmm. Just as the need arises and how useful it would be. And if the party is willing to go with it. So if you've got a party of 14-year-old hormonal teenagers, then you might find yourself creating some rather interesting and possibly never again used skills.
Yeah, I used to kind of be in the idea of where everything really should have its own skill on the sheet. I always made my own character sheets for the games I ran, and so I just, you know, gave lots of different skill choices on there. And then I would just simply say, okay, well, your career skills are times 22 instead of 20, your personal interest is times 12 instead of 10, and that way they have extra points to throw towards those extra skills if they want. You know, that worked fairly well. But now I'm getting more into the area of thinking where, you know, it is kind of more practical to condense down. You know, I'm like,
well, it's easier on you and the player as well.
Yeah, exactly.
By doing that.
You know, and it makes the sheet less cluttered and in a mess. You know, so I don't really have objections to some of those things they did for 7E. Like, okay, let's take sneak and hide and make them stealth. That makes total sense to me now.
Yeah, I'm fine with that, yeah.
You know, and let's take, you know, all the various scientific things and just make science with, like, three or four blanks under it, and then whatever their specialties are, you know, just write that down.
Yeah, just like we did with art or languages, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's no reason not to do that there.
Art and craft is now one skill.
Right.
With three or four blanks. So it makes sense to actually condense, and also don't be afraid of ever going for some sort of an attribute roll. Either the attribute times 5 if it's something that is fairly easy, or, you know, an attribute with a different multiplier.
I tend to use that quite a bit, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself falling back to that more than I find myself creating a skill. Well, it depends on this. It depends on the circumstances, but I seem to remember myself actually saying, you know, just do it such and such times 5 and see what happens.
Yeah.
More than I do thinking, well, I wonder if I could make that into a new skill or a new, you know, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, and with the move to 7E, since your attributes are going to be, you know, times 5, your you know, new skills can either be an attribute at its full value or half or 1/5, depending upon how difficult the scenario is with that new skill. And I was thinking of an area where skills, you know, do get explicit, and I have done this, especially with new things I've created, is with weapons.
That's a very good point.
In like Timeless Sands of India, my bad guys have a special grenade. Of course, the name escapes me right now. But I gave the bad guys an actual skill with that grenade name, so they were explicitly skilled with that type of grenade.
Yeah, you know, weapons makes a lot of sense for that. It also would make sense for. That's one thing I kind of liked about the D20. Direction of it, of specializing in something very specific and kind of drill down with getting better with one thing. But, you know, that means if you pick up something that's similar but not exact, then you're not quite as practiced with it.
Yeah, sure. I agree. Especially with weapons, the melee weapons especially. Mm-hmm. I think that you can break that out into every single weapon has its own skill. I don't think that you need to do that as a course of action. I think that you can use the generic ones that are there already, you know, sword. So that you think of that as like your basic short sword, long sword skill from D&D or whatever, or for D20. And then you have your proficiencies would be your individual item skills, you know. So now you have bastard sword or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I would go with, like, categories of, you know, slashing swords versus piercing swords.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree there as
you
well.
You use them in very different ways, and the weight and balance is going to be completely different. So, right. Yeah, somebody who's used to a rapier you give them a broadsword and they're going to be, you know, as clumsy as can be with this thing, unless they've spent some kind of time with something heavier like that.
Or even the inverse, where someone with a broadsword gets a rapier, they're right. not going to hardly do anything because they're just slapping people with the, with the rapier. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome.
Trying to poke them.
It'd probably wind up breaking it.
That's almost the infight from Rob Roy, right? With Liam Neeson. And
never saw it.
Are you kidding me? Oh, you've got to go watch that, dude. The infight is Liam Neeson fighting with a Scottish claymore. Oh my God, what is that guy's name? The other main character who I cannot believe I've forgotten his name, fighting him with a small saber or foil or épée, I think is actually an épée. But it's an interesting fight because you have a claymore versus an épée.
Hmm.
I won't tell you who wins, but neither walk away unscathed, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's, you know, that makes the most sense to me as far as having that kind of a breakdown, you know, particularly melee weapons. You know, for firearms, you could make an argument for, okay, an automatic has a different feel from a revolver. You know,
a semi-automatic, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think automatics would be a completely third option because that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, full auto is totally different.
Yeah.
But, you know, a semi-auto pistol actually has its own built-in compensation for the recoil. Kick. And yeah. Whereas a revolver, just you move your arm up to go along with it, and that's just how it works. So those conceivably could have different skills broken out if your game was focused on using that kind of skill set. Otherwise, I really don't think it's worth the extra worry about, you know, the paperwork. You know, you need to balance practicality versus bookkeeping.
I would say if you wanted to, I would have your characters choose, you know, the players choose what their main weapon would be, and then have that skill created as their weapon skill. So they would, I mean, they would have their base in whatever their, so the base in their weapon skill would be their current amount in that generic field. So let's say they wanted, my current weapon's going to be a 1911 Colt 45, right? I have 43 points in pistol. So my base would be 43 points in the 1911 skill, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when I increase, I'm going to increase just the 1911 skill because that's the weapon that I'm using. And then that way you have that base to fall back on if he picks up another weapon. And then you have his specialized weapon, which is his, which he does much better with than anything else he's likely to pick up.
Hmm.
I think that's how I might adjust that now, just because I don't want to have to deal with, you know, having 45,000 different weapon variants and all of that. And
yeah.
So just have them choose their particular weapon and then have the base class of that weapon still available as a, you know, as their regular skill.
Yeah. So basically if they check the skill, the check goes for the specific one that they were using at the time.
Hmm. Right. Right.
Not bad.
And that, I mean, that's just another idea. You know, there, I mean, there's a million different ways to do this, but we kind of got, I mean, it is still on topic, I guess, because it's skills and mm-hmm. weapons are skills in this game. But, you know, there's a million ways of doing this, and I don't think any of, you know, the ones we mentioned are any one better than the other, that's for sure.
Yeah, but thanks for the topic idea, Logar, and I hope this was helpful.
Yeah, very cool.
And if you have your own ideas, please come to the forums and tell us there.
Absolutely.
Settle down now, class. It's time for your next lesson.
All right. And this is another one from the forums that is from our friend who's been mentioned a couple other times in the show so far. This is from Trevlix.
Who?
I don't recognize that name.
I don't know who this is.
Well, that's okay. I would love to hear you guys talk about sources of inspiration. It seems that I come up with a great idea for a scenario, to me at least. Then I get to writing it and get discouraged partway through. How do you guys stay inspired, and where do you get ideas from?
John, I'm really glad you're here for this one. Because I happen to have this exact issue. I think it's funny that he asked that question, but I have the same virtual problem. I start writing a scenario and I kind of lose focus on it. And how do you get around that?
It can be difficult. I mean, I'll have huge delays in some of my writing because of motivational, dips and lulls. But it's just kind of, still wanting to trying to get that idea into final focus is what, for me, is what gets me through and eventually, brings me across the goal line. So, inspiration and ideas can come from all kinds of places, and it could be very minor. Have you guys heard about the hum? There's that thing on the internet, whatever, about how different places in the world will hear a hum, and they haven't found any source on what the hum is coming from. Are you all familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But go ahead.
So different places in the world will report that for unexplained reasons, you'll be outside or something like that, and you'll hear this audible hum. There'll just be this weird noise in the air. That is something that I've wanted to have a scenario written about in order to, bring about an explanation of the hum, And then there could be other creepy things too. I heard something and now I wish I could remember who said it. I was listening to a podcast, and I listened to a wide variety of podcasts, but I heard somebody talk about something where animal scratches on the inside of someone's skull. So I have this image in my head where there's an autopsy and you take off the top of the skull and there's nothing inside, and everything has been the inner side of the skull has all these animal scratches. And I'm like,
that's creepy.
I want that to be the focus, the jumping off point for some sort of scenario, And so my head is twisting on that thought almost every day, which is so creepy. I just keep thinking of these animal scratches inside of an empty skull, and nobody, people are, in my thought, people are just like, just for no unexplained reason, they just drop dead in the middle of their afternoon. And then there are these repeated occurrences of it, and autopsies show that there's nothing on the inside of the skull, and there are these animal scratches, So go from there. But yeah, so sources can come from anything for me, and it, as I observe, and it's trying to take that and then keep pushing it forward, and get to the end.
It is one of those things that I would say it's similar to almost any project that you're working on. I mean, you can do the same thing if you're, doing woodworking, where you do part of it and you step away for a couple days and you just don't feel inspired to go back to it. My wife actually gets a very similar issue with knitting. It's something that's pretty common called second sock syndrome, where you finish one and you don't feel like going back and replicating the exact same process again.
And so you end up with a bunch of mismatched knitted socks?
You just wind up with singles.
That's funny, though. I never heard of that, but that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I do that myself quite a bit, I find out. As sources of inspiration, I typically find inspiration from mythos stuff all over. I mean, from books to movies to TV, comic books even, other games, other game materials. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that this show even. I seem to be able to glean something out of almost anything with regards to, what you can put into a game, especially in Call of Cthulhu. You can put dang near anything into it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those things of where Call of Cthulhu is a great game for come up with something that you do in everyday life and take one aspect of it and twist it. You know, it could be something right. as simple as, you know, if you've got the pattern of stopping by a favorite coffee place on the way to work in the morning, you know, okay, the act of buying a cup of coffee is something that happens, you know, billions of times a day. Take some aspect of that and twist it and make it, you know, weird and disturbing. You know, maybe this one particular chain has this new flavor out that, you know, everybody's just fallen in love with, but what it actually is that they're doing for the flavor is a closely guarded secret, and then they're...
Busathla crystals. That's what they add to the cocktails.
Yeah.
Something sufficiently
and
disturbing.
And then you use influences from other stuff. There's the old movie, The Stuff, which was essentially
I was just going to say that.
Which was basically Ubosathla being sold as yogurt.
Yeah.
And then there's Futurama, Slurm.
Slurm.
There's Slurm. This yeah. drink beverage stuff that was the excretion of a bug queen.
You know, right. And could not get enough of it, though.
Yeah.
No, they could.
Even after you find out what it is, it's like, well, it is good.
You know, I could still
like
eat
that.
It.
You know, it's that was just like literally just off the cuff. Okay, there's a weird, you know, one shot to throw in there. Then you have to just come up with, you know, your actual story hooks of, okay, yeah, you're, you know, a friend or relative now has these bizarre symptoms and other people are showing up with it. And the only connection that anyone can find or that anyone bothered looking can find is, you know, this coffee flavor that they've become, you know, engrossed in.
So part of Travelix's question is also, how do we stay inspired? And something that I wish I was better at doing, but I think is a good idea, is play test not the entire scenario that you're working on, but different vignettes. So as you get different pieces of the scenario conceived, and maybe even not fully written, just even in rough notes conceived, try and play test some of those vignettes. See how some of those pieces play out. You know, what are some of the outcomes that the players do that'll help you hopefully predict the type of outcomes that other players will do, but getting that immediate feedback from your players in these vignette playtests, I can conceive how that would be inspiration, that would fuel the fires of creativity to keep you going and take, you know, that next step and go from this vignette to the next vignette to the next vignette until you finally have enough pieces put together that you've got a scenario.
Yeah. And just create up the connective tissue and detail that, and there you go.
Yep.
You know, otherwise, for just being a GM in general, you know, one of the main guidelines that is generally encouraged is to steal liberally from anywhere and everywhere.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You know, if you can think of something that gave you the tone or emotional impact that you're looking for from a movie or show, then simply rip it out, reskin it with whatever your setting is, and tweak just enough of it that it doesn't become, you know, such a blatant, you know, obvious thing, because that can take your players out of the actual game you're trying to do. You go, oh, this is, you know, exactly like this bit in Aliens. But what you want to do is get them to where they they might catch on to the flavor of it and go, oh, okay, cool. I've been wanting to, you know, actually try this kind of scenario because it is a familiar thing. And if you're writing something for publication, then you have to be more careful with it and you don't want it to scream, you know, that there's obvious influence draws from anything other than the proper, like, literature source material that the game's based on.
Because you can also, like, right now in our game, or the game I'm running, the players have put themselves in a situation where it's going to be very easy in the next game for me to just draw on real-life events that have happened. You know, just not necessarily current, but recent things that have gone on. And I'll go ahead and tell you about it because it's going to happen already by the time you hear this. So basically what they've done is they were able to sell something for an insanely large amount of money due to some good rolls, right? Mm-hmm. And they're way too they have way too much money now. And I need a way to gain control of them again. And the easiest way to do that is to strip them of their cash. You know, or at least the vast majority of it, because in a Dreamlands game, the currency value is very strange. It uses like a gold system, but golds are ridiculously expensive. Like, put them on a level of like an Electrum piece in D&D or something. You know, I mean, they're unheard of to the vast majority of the population, except for the extremely, extremely rich who use them like copper, right? But anyway, they have this ridiculous large amount of money. So what we're going to do next game is I'm going to do a run on the banks and devalue the gold piece to zilch, therefore removing the vast majority of their fortune so that I can get them back into play as normal without having to deal with their delusions of grandeur that they're going through right now.
And in a fantasy setting, that's not really all that difficult to do, because then you'd simply have an alchemist actually have the lead to gold work.
Well, or in this case,
the economy's gone haywire.
Yeah, or in this case, I have four PCs who are flooding the market with gold pieces. I mean, because they're buying stuff that usually costs two or three copper, and they're paying five or six gold because they're failing rolls left and right, or they're just not thinking about it. And so they're literally flooding the lower income portion of the Dreamlands doesn't ever see a gold piece. Like, it doesn't exist to them. And they're literally buying off menial servants with lifetime wages at a pop, just tossing it at them, you know? And so, you know, they're just destroying the economic balance of this town that they're in, and therefore they're going to reap the benefits, man. So that was an inspiration for me. Once they did that, I was like, okay, well, now we have to have a run on the banks, and that'll help me move my story along as well.
Yeah,
but I can't say much because I robbed them this last game, so I'm not very nice to my players whenever they get like that. So I'm not mean, but I did rob my players, so they lost a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. But
Wolf of Cthulhu is not a game based on gear.
No, it is not. And I think I reminded them of that.
Mm-hmm.
Nor is it a game you should rely on your first judgment of random individuals. So just to recap what had happened. I know I'm getting off subject, but we had a player character who got off a boat and looked around, sold this huge item, realized he had a crap load of money, found the first dangerous looking individual that he saw in a crowd of people and said, "Hey, you want to be my bodyguard? Find 30 of your friends. Let's go." That didn't end up well. you can only imagine. So, it was just it was a funny move on his part that he did that, which is, it was kind of out of character for him personally, but that's what happened. So they got robbed by those same people that they were paying to uphold them.
That's awesome.
So anyway, yeah, you can always find inspiration for stuff anywhere. I mean, whether it be from fiction, literature, news, it doesn't really matter. It just, if it fits in the game that you're using or that you're running right now, then use it. You know, there's nothing to stop you.
Yeah, absolutely. It all comes down to what is it that interests you about the specific thing that you're shooting towards. You know, find what that piece is and then focus in on it. You know, and sometimes if you get, you know, discouraged partway through, step back away from it for a short time. You know, give yourself a little bit of distance and look at it again with fresh eyes. And when you do that, you might find, you know, a new direction to go in, or just even, you know, re-describing something when you look at it fresh and say, okay, that doesn't make as much sense as I thought it did originally, and you just rewrite that bit, and that can get you motivated to go further and keep running with it.
Yeah, I pitched an idea for a scenario to someone, and they really liked the idea, and so they sent me a book to read, because this is a subject I need to stay vague at this point because it hasn't been announced. But they sent me a book because they're really interested in the high concept of this idea. Well, since then I've kind of waxed and waned, you know, on my interest of that particular pitch, because I feel like I'm you know, it's a one trick pony, and it's, you know, I'm painting myself into a corner, and it, you know, I don't know if I can make it either scary or interesting enough to merit, you know, being a scenario, right? But I haven't had the chance to read the book that he sent me yet. So as soon as I get into reading that book, I'm hoping that will reignite the initial fires and restoke those fires so that I can find and push through and find that the end points. Because at this point, as I think about this scenario, I'm not sure where I'm going to go with it. I don't know. I don't have a high concept, even though, you know, I don't want to railroad, or I try to limit the railroading I do. You know, I don't want to try and force them down, you know, certain railroad tracks. But I still feel like I need to have a concept of what an end scenario could be for every, you know, for all these things that I write. And I don't have that yet for this. So I'm hoping the book will, upon finishing it, will give me that inspiration. So I can totally relate with Trevlix and being able to have an idea, start it, lose it, and then, you know, how do you get back? So those are some of the different things. Is, you know, maybe do some playtesting of your vignettes, maybe read a book, or, you know, find some of the source to draw upon, and maybe, you know, you'll get your fuel to push on through and get to the end there.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Very cool.
It is. Yeah, that's a good idea.
We want to hear from our listeners, and we got lots of different ways for you guys to get in touch with us.
Our main contact email address is feedback@mu-podcast.com. We also have a Twitter account at @mu_podcast, and you can join me on our IRC channel at @MiskatonicU on Freenode.
We have a Providence, Rhode Island voicemail number, area code 401-400-0MUP. That's 401-400-0687. Ask a question, leave us a liner, and say who you are, and I'm enrolled at the Miskatonic University podcast. And give us a hearty Go Pods for our home team, the Fighting Cephalopods.
Our website is www.mu-podcast.com, and you can find our show notes for this episode at mu-podcast.com/42. That's the number 42.
Our forums are over at mu-podcast.com/campus. We also have a thread on the Yog-Sothoth forums in the Arkham Market Square section, and we've got our listing in the D20 Radio forums, too.
sign up for the show on iTunes, or you can listen to the RSS feed found on the website.
If you have an event or news to share, go to mu-podcast.com/guest to be a guest poster on the website. And the link on the right-hand side of the website is our SpeakPipe link. Click it, please.
Yes. As you can tell, it sounds good.
It does, especially on iPad, evidently.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us for another episode. Class is dismissed.
The Call of Cthulhu role-playing game is property of Chaosium, Inc. The written works of H.P. Lovecraft are held in the United States public domain. All other works mentioned in this podcast are the property of their respective owners. Original content of this show is copyright of the Miskatonic University Podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license.
Just as an aside, a few moments ago, I got a IM from Chad, Keeper Chad, saying, I just got a really creepy robocall from Indiana University saying the campus is on lockdown and armed individuals are at large, period. Turns out to be real, period. And then, do not approach the dog park. Do not look at hooded figures in the dog park.
All hail the glow cloud.
He's under lockdown and paranoid now.
Andy just evidently showed up in Skype.
Yeah, I know. He was threatening. Maybe he's going to actually try and do it. He feels really bad about not being here is what the deal is.
He should. Damn it.
We all made it.
There's no excuse.
Yeah, coming from John, the irony
I know.
Is palpable.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thick. Pot. It's thick. Meat kettle.
It's thick.
You know, at least we try to make it every time, John. We're so much better than you are.
I had a splinter.
I stubbed my toe, damn it. That shit hurts.
It was a hangnail. I couldn't take the pain.
The answer to the great question.
Yes.
Of life, the universe, and everything.
Yes.
Is.
Yes.
Is.
Yes.
42. It was a tough assignment.
42?